Are you hoping to find an inspirational gift for a spiritual friend? Check out the gift bundles in the Unity Online store this season. These are large and small collections of Unity books, booklets, and products, so you can pick exactly the right assortment of thoughtful gifts. You'll find notepads, card decks, calendars, the positive prayer wheel, and even the prayer for protection lamp bundled together for your convenience. Find it all at unity.org/shop.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Empower yourself and get inspired to build the life of your dreams. Welcome to Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James.
Welcome to Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James. I am super excited to have you join us today while we explore the concept of living a life of peace every day. Peace defined as wholeness, completeness, nothing missing, nothing broken, totality. I want you to take a big, deep breath in, hold it for just a moment, and exhale slowly and fully as you just imagine, visualize yourself having a day, an hour, even a minute of just total peace. And know this, that yes, it is possible for you to have peace every day. Yes, you deserve peace every day. And yes, you can have peace every day. We work together on this show to bring you the topics and the guests to partner with you as you create your life of peace every day. And today is no exception. We have a fabulous guest today. Before I bring our guest on, I want to tell you about some free items for you, the Everyday Peacemaker. Of course, we are giving away our Passion course, 7-day course to understand how to work, live, and be in your passion. Wouldn't life be so much better if we could exist in that space? So the 7-day passion course can be yours absolutely free if you would just email DrayvonJames@gmail.com and put free in the subject line, and we'll get that out to you. Also, we have online courses at an online university. The Institute for Leadership and Lifelong Learning has a wonderful course catalog, and they offer free courses as well. Yours truly. I teach a course on there called the 2020 Clarity Course, but there are many fabulous courses on there. So check out the Institute for Leadership and Lifelong Learning. I'm sure you'll find something there that you absolutely love. So today we are talking with Dr. Esther Onyani. She is a pharmacist and a health coach and an aspiring functional medicine practitioner. She graduated from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and has been practicing pharmacy for 14 years in a community setting. She became a diabetes health coach after observing and recognizing the struggles of her patients, especially those with chronic conditions. Their health kept deteriorating, their medication list kept getting longer and longer, and the situation, she realized, could easily be changed by changing some lifestyle habits. Her passion is to bring hope to her clients by empowering them to be active participants in their own health, helping reduce their pill burden and improve the quality of their life. Dr. Esther Onyani, welcome to the Everyday Peace Show with Dr. Drayvon James. I am so excited to have you on here today.
Thank you for welcoming me here, Dr. James. I'm excited to be here as well.
Yes, you know, I have been a pharmacist for 31 years. It's hard to even believe it, 31 years. So when I came across your material and saw the wonderful work you were doing, I knew I wanted to have you on the show because diabetes, and you can tell us all about, you know, where we are with diabetes as a country, as a world, and what's going on with that. I think people will be amazed at how staggering the numbers are and what it's doing to people's lives. But before we get into all that, let's just get a little bit to know you. And I asked this question. I'm a preceptor for the university here in Maryland and for pharmacy students. And I ask every semester when I get a new group of students, I ask the same question. Why pharmacy? What made you choose to become a pharmacist?
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. So, yeah, I grew up in Kenya, right? And that's how my journey to pharmacy started. And I came to the United States after high school. But, you know, being in Kenya, there was malaria, an endemic blissful malaria. And so, obviously, I suffered from that as well. And so, knowing whenever I got sick, my parents took me to the hospital. And then while I was there, I just observed that people still were suffering probably a lot more than I was, even when you wonder why I was in the hospital. But my parents really needed to be there. But so as a child, I was just thinking, what can I do? Like, when I grow up, I want to be able to help people who are suffering in this way, because we were in a government hospital, so obviously it's for people who needed services at a lower rate or at no charge. And most of the time we went there, they didn't have medicine, sent you back home because of that reason. And you're in a hospital and you shouldn't go home because they didn't have another way of helping you. And to me, I just thought they suffered a lot. And whenever they sent us to the pharmacy, the seat of pharmacy was planted for me, because I saw this professional in the pharmacy who, after describing your symptoms, would walk to the back of the pharmacy, a remedy for you, so you did not have to go home without medication or without your problem being solved. I thought that's just exactly what I want to do when I grow up, because I would be more accessible to people and solve their immediate problem, really, if I could say that. And so, but obviously that was, I thought I had at that time as a child. It's like a dream I stuffed and buried somewhere, because growing in Kenya, I did not really have aspirations, like I can make it to be a pharmacist. And that did come back up when we had the opportunity to come to the United States. And, you know, they say it's a land of opportunity. And so it was true for me. And, you know, the rest is history. I did make it through pharmacy school and became a pharmacist.
That is amazing. Thank you for sharing. You touched on something that many people say to me, even now. I just finished with this group of students. And one of the things that still 31 years later, after, you know, it's been 31 years since my practice began, and it was the, how accessible the pharmacist was to be able to be right there on the front line with the needs of the community and to offer assistance, which was very, very much appealing to not only myself, but a lot of people that I work with. And it sounds like the same thing for you as well. So fast forward, you're in this career, you're serving in the community setting. And as your bio states, you start noticing something that we all notice, right? You see the same patients over and over and over and over. And if you're lucky enough to have stability in your career, you grow with the community, you realize that, hey, these people are not necessarily getting better. And what I want to say at the forefront is that in no way are we saying that medication is not the answer. For many people, it is going to be something that is necessary. But what we're saying is that maybe not just the medication, because if you've been taking something for the last 15, 20 years, and it becomes that maybe your levels are not even stabilized, or you cannot exist, you know, without it even for a day, perhaps there is something else that you can either be adding to your medication regimen, or maybe even perhaps if you happen to be one of those people, could replace your medicine regimen. But under no circumstances are we saying to stop using your medicine without talking to your doctor. That's my whole point behind that statement. So here we are. You're doing what most of us are doing. You're in that community setting and you're seeing these patients coming in. And for you, it was the trigger was with this particular disease, say, of diabetes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So tell us what you were seeing with diabetic patients.
Yes. So basically, being trained, okay, this is how a condition is diagnosed, and this is how it's treated, and we went to that, and this is the standards of care, or guidelines that have been put in place on how to treat patients. And so when it came to diabetes, I observed that, yes, we followed the guidelines. We were given the medication and we went to the doctor. But then whenever I called them back, they would say, oh, I did not start taking that medication, you know, and the reason is that I read on the label about the side effects that it could cause. And so I did not start. I wanted to talk to the doctor some more. But here you are, your condition is getting worse, you're still waiting. And then also just seeing how they continuously ask questions. I think that my blood sugar is still up, my medicine, and I don't know what to eat because it's already up there. If I eat anything, it's fast, or I'm just going to eat lettuce. And you can just see how much of misinformation or how much information they're missing. And also just seeing them constantly come in with one medication, and then next thing you know, they're not feeling well.
And Esther, I'm going to stop you for 1 second because I'm getting a little static when you're talking. I don't know if you can hear that on your end. The information that you're giving is so very important. I don't want our audience to miss some of the words. But and I do hear what you're saying is that you get these patients coming in and they have questions. Maybe they've read something. You know, we give this information packet, and sometimes the side effects profile is very disturbing to some patients for whatever particular medicine that they're on, and disturbing to the point where a lot of them, not a lot, but some of them do say that, oh, I decided not to take the medication, even though my blood levels are high. I decided not to take the medication until I speak to my physician. And for whatever reason, either they don't make that contact with the physician or the messages aren't clear, for whatever reason, they do not make contact with their physician and they just go without medicine. And we all know what happens. You know, this is not something that if left untreated or left with your lifestyle modifications not in place, the idea of this just going away, we're talking about diabetes, the idea of it just going away one day without any deliberate effort on your behalf is probably not likely. So, that is so true. So I'll let you pick up from there.
Uh-huh. And then also just whenever they have been diagnosed, they, let's say they're at the doctor's office, you're told you have diabetes, you don't always know the right questions to ask to, in order to be able to take care of yourself when you get home. Sometimes people receive their information differently. Maybe they froze and they are thinking, I don't know what to do, and they didn't ask anything. And so they would call me to ask, what am I going to do next? And so I saw that need because they sounded like, as soon as they were told maybe that they had diabetes, they immediately went, their brain immediately went into complications. Oh, I'm going to lose a limb, or I'm going to get into dialysis. And they just felt like it was the end of things. So there was that lack of enough time to explain to them how to take care of themselves so that this condition does not become progressive or get worse for them. And so to me, it sounded like there's limited belief in what the human body can do. And I thought that I can influence or encourage these people to be active participants in their own health by stepping out of the back of the pharmacy to the front and tell them that, or at least encourage them that there is another way of looking at their condition. It does not have to be the dead end of your health.
Very good. And I think that's an important message to have, because you're right, people hear this diagnosis and automatically sometimes they just freeze and they don't know. It's like circuit overload. They are just stumped and they're automatically in this scenario in their mind have buried themselves, and, you know, and they lose the ability to even ask a coherent question because they're just overwhelmed with the how could this happen and all of the worst case scenario stories that are going on behind the scene. So it's nice when they settle down to be able to call the pharmacist and say, okay, this diagnosis I received a couple of weeks ago or a couple of days ago, and I need to know what is the next thing to do. And so, of course, for many years, I think, you know, we were all saying the next thing to do is to follow the regimen. You know, we were still saying that, follow the regimen put forth by your prescriber and your provider. But in the medical community as a whole also does prescribe lifestyle changes to their, they're big proponent of lifestyle changes. And I wanted to say here, as a people, I think that we have got to become a bit more proactive. I know you said that in your bio, a bit more proactive in our thinking towards healing. You know, that if something about our lifestyle is taking our life in the wrong direction, then we have to really make the decision that we're going to change those things about our lifestyle, even to a small degree, sometimes makes huge results. So you get these patients that come back and they're asking you this question, you know, so first, before we go into that, let's talk about functional medicine, because as I talk this topic, like I normally do with people that I meet, there is a lot of confusion and in fact, just plain out ignorance about what functional medicine is. So bring us up to speed on that. What is functional medicine? When we hear that term, what are you talking about?
Yes. And so when I first ran into that term, I kind of thought, well, I thought I wanted to be a pharmacist, but there is more to it. Basically, something that was not brought up to us in school. We were just told, this is how you treat, and that's it. And then you make your own observation and see that there is more that's needed. So functional medicine is where you get to the root cause of a disease, the practice of getting to the root cause of a disease. So why are you sick in the first place? And it is a patient-centered approach that seeks to address the whole person rather than treating the symptoms. So that if you know the root cause of your condition, then you're able to address that, you're able to eliminate that, and then you in the long run, you end up eliminating the diagnosis. And so it seeks to look at interactions among, in your lifestyle, in your environment, in your genetics, and how those factors affect or influence your long-term health or how they influence your disease.
Oh, I love it. So it's looking for the patient-centered approach that's looking for the root cause of the symptoms or the disease. And I think that's so very important because oftentimes we are looking on the surface for what appears to be the cause. And oftentimes that's not the cause at all, but we're in the treating just that and saying, oh, well, the liver is over-functioning or under-functioning, as it were. And when it really is, okay, that's one level, but there's a level, if you go just a little bit below that to the cause before that, we get better results and outcomes of treating that. So how do functional medicines providers get to the root cause? How do they do that? How do they find the root cause of something like diabetes?
Okay. So it's interesting that when someone presents with a condition or diagnosis, sometimes the reason they are having it is not what we're used to thinking. So for example, diabetes, you don't have diabetes because your blood sugar is high. The reason or the root cause of diabetes is insulin resistance. So this is when your body is not able to respond to insulin whenever it's produced by the pancreas. And so your blood sugar stays up. And the reason for this is that insulin is produced so that your cells can take up the glucose from your blood. But there's already a lot of glucose in the cell. And it's stored there, especially as we see whenever someone is not as active, when they're not being active, moving or using their muscles or the cells. So it's stored there. And so the extra glucose is still lingering in the blood system, and your body is triggered to produce more insulin because it can see that glucose, which is not going anywhere. And so as a result, you end up going to the doctor and they find that your blood sugar is spiked, and then they diagnose you with diabetes. So basically, what's causing your diabetes is that insulin resistance, which is not one of the standard labs that the doctor checks. And the insulin resistance is caused. Now we have to go deeper and look at what's causing this insulin resistance, what's causing it to cause your body to produce so much of it and your glucose to go nowhere.
And yeah, let's spend just a quick moment there. And we're talking about insulin resistance. I know probably the general public has heard, you know, antibiotic resistance, right? We hear about these super infections and we say, well, you know, because the antibiotic has become resistant to that particular, bacteria has become resistant to that particular antibiotic. But we're talking about insulin resistance. And I'll let you just talk a little bit about that, about how the insulin is being produced, but there is some problems with it being latching on to the cells and that nature. Do you want to just explain that just a little bit so that our non-clinical audience members can get the benefit of knowing what does it mean when you say you're insulin resistant?
Mm-hmm. So basically, your body is producing a lot of insulin to respond to the amount of glucose that's in your blood system, and that's or in your blood, and it's there for reasons that I'm going to tell you. You know, maybe it's your diet, stress, whatever it is. So it's causing your blood sugar to stay up, but it's also triggering your pancreas to produce more insulin. But it's got nowhere to go because the cells are not taking it up, and mm-hmm. So it just spikes and. Your body's, so in a sense, your body's resisting that insulin because it's not responding to what it's supposed to do when the insulin is present. And what ends up happening is when your body sees a lot of insulin lingering around, it triggers it to store fat. And sometimes you'd see people with diabetes gain weight. And they're not gaining weight because they're diabetic, but it's because maybe there's just so much insulin lingering around, causing their blood to store the fats or the sugar in their body and causing them to gain weight.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And that's one of the major things that we see with diabetes is this weight gain when really your caloric intake hasn't increased that much, right? So there's something going on. That leads us nicely into talking about some things that are going on in the gut that could be participatory in this diabetic diagnoses and these symptoms and your body going into a diabetic state. Share with us a little bit about some of the effects on the gut, because gut health is everywhere now. You can't turn on television without hearing about gut health. Why is gut health so important first? And then why is it so important in treating diabetes? And I know we only have a few minutes left before we go to commercial break, but we'll take as much as we can before we go to commercial break and then pick it back up.
Okay. Yes, so gut health, who is a Hippocrates who said all disease begins in the gut. So your gut, your stomach lining is very tight, and it's meant to allow only nutrients that are useful to your body to be absorbed through, to go into your blood, to help your body thrive. However, with lots of things that we use, you know, the medication that we take that can be causing harm to your lining, or the food we ingest even, you know, that has toxins in it, maybe it's causing your body to get sick, and that compromises that lining. So it can be other things that people eat, or if they are sensitive to a particular kind of food. We've heard of gluten, all of those cause your lining to weaken. And when it's weaker, it causes your stomach lining, it causes your body to just absorb all the things that are coming through your gut without, you know, being tightly filtered, and then this become foreign objects in your body. Obviously causing or triggering your body to start fighting them.
Yeah.
And that's how the gut affects diabetes. I'll explain more into this.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, it sounds complicated in the sense that there's a lot to know, variables in here, but really what we're saying in essence, there are certain foods that you are eating, that I am eating, and that look to be healthy on the surface. Like, these foods would really be healthy for us, but for whatever reason, they are causing there to be a malfunctioning of the gut, meaning things that shouldn't be passing into the bloodstream are passing in there, food particles are passing in there, you're having inflammatory responses to foods, and they're not disturbing enough that they send you to the hospital right away. So years could go on and you'd be existing with this inflammatory process going on in the body, and then one day go for a checkup because of a few annoying symptoms and discover that, yeah, you've got some damage to the lining in your gut, which has caused you to change your lifestyle a little bit and led to, maybe not change it all the way, but to make little changes, but has led to diabetic-like symptoms. Many other symptoms too can occur with inflammation and gut health issues. So this is an important part that we're talking about, I think, and we're going to come back to this after the break to really hone on into, as Dr. Onyani talks about diabetic health and being a change in lifestyle. I think you're going to find it very, very interesting that a lot of those changes in lifestyle have to do with how we treat the gut, what we're doing for gut health. And like I said, it's becoming more and more mainstream in the commercials I hear talking about gut health. It's so very important. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Onyani? We're going to come right back after this commercial break and discuss gut health and tips that you can do and definitely share with your family for improving your health if you happen to or know someone who is suffering from diabetes.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Create and build the life of your dreams. Welcome back to Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James.
Well, welcome back. This is Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James, and we have a fabulous guest here today, Dr. Esther Onyani, who is discussing with us lifestyle changes, ways to improve your health if you're suffering from diabetes, and decrease perhaps the amount of pills that you're taking or other insulins that you're taking by making some strategic lifestyle changes. So just before the break, we're talking about gut health. And I'd like to continue a little bit on that, Dr. Yanni, because it's mainstream. The topic of gut health is mainstream, but I'm not sure that most people understand the effects of inflammation on the body and all that's coming from the foods that we're taking. So what are some of the foods food-like products? I see the FDA uses that term sometimes, food-like products that are causing damage to the gut and resulting in inflammation.
Okay, so things that are causing damage to the gut, so basically processed food, because it's got all these chemicals that are used to process it. And yes, you're eating the food, but you don't know what those chemicals are doing to your body. And they are compromising the gut lining. And then foods that contain pesticides. So it depends on how you're buying food, how it's produced. That's why we see people say, oh, buy organic, but and others will say it is expensive. But depending on where you are, that's something to consider, because the pesticides are another thing that can compromise the gut lining. But as I was alluding earlier, the way the gut lining, once it's compromised, and it's allowing all these foods or nutrients that are not broken down to get into your blood system, they trigger your body to fight, because they see a foreign object. This just like they would see bacteria and start fighting, and here you have an infection.
So they start fighting these foreign objects, which are nutrients that they're not used to. And as a result, you have inflammation. So that's how inflammation occurs. And when you have inflammation, it's a stressor to your body. So your body is stressing, trying to fight off this product. And when you're stressed out, your blood sugar does go up. So that's how it's connected to the gut lining, and is connected to diabetes. So it's all that inflammation going on. Some other products that can cause your gut lining to be inflamed would be things like if your body doesn't respond to milk. So we have people who have lactose intolerance. Okay, so it does cause gas and all of that. But if your stomach lining is compromised and your body takes in the milk, there is the protein in there that is called casein, and that protein can also trigger inflammation trigger your immune system, so that your body thinks you're allergic to it, and can cause you to have, of all things, sinus congestion. So you started with one thing and it ends up giving you sinus congestion. You can't even put it together. It's such a subtle thing. So it calls for someone to really tune into their body, what they're taking in, to see how they can help themselves or what's causing whatever issue they're struggling with.
Yeah, and I like something that you said earlier that I just want to hit on. You mentioned about foods that can cause inflammation, and this inflammation, this damage being done to the gut lining, and it's causing an increase in stress. And a lot of times we think to ourselves, well, I don't feel stressed. But what I believe you're talking about, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a stress on your system. So your body is working a lot harder than what it should have to do, because you've got this food particles that are passing through the barrier and the gut, and that they shouldn't have to be passing through there. So now your immune system is having to work, is stressed because it has to work overtime in order to resolve this foreign products that they see floating around in the bloodstream and what have you. So that's the kind of stress we're talking about. You yourself may feel calm and happy, but your body is stressed because these food particles that shouldn't be passing through this gut barrier are passing through. Your body's trying to fight those off, and it's causing stress on the system, and thereby causing your blood sugar levels to rise, right? And you're wondering what the heck is going on here, right? You can't figure out what's going on. The human body is amazing at how adaptable it is. It's one of the highest functioning machines in the world, I believe, that what it will do to compensate and how long it will do it with running in the background. But always bear in mind that while it's doing these superhero things to keep us going, something else is being deprived. And one of those things is being able to process the sugar level, and then you have this increased sugar level. So this is really good information. So we're talking about, you know, things that will increase your, you mentioned casein. A lot of people don't even know that, you know, this dairy protein that occurs, you mentioned causing sinuses. And that's one of the first things when I used to work in community practice, I would tell people when they came and complained about sinuses, is to think about cutting out a little bit of dairy, which creates all this mucus in the body. And I think that's pretty much mainstream knowledge now, that dairy is very, very harsh on the system, very difficult to process dairy for the body. If you're sensitive, even if you're not sensitive, and you mentioned, I don't know if we talked about gluten yet. Gluten is something that I believe everybody to some degree is having some reaction to gluten, whether they, you know, they may not have full out gluten allergy, but to some degree, I'm seeing people complain about symptoms that I would say, oh yeah, that's related to gluten. How are you feeling about grains and glutens these days?
Well, and I actually, the other thing with the gluten is that, of course, there's more knowledge of that now, but there is so many other proteins similar to gluten that have not been researched or are in the pipeline, obviously. And so even if somebody knows that they have gluten sensitivity and they avoid foods that have gluten, this is still research in progress. So obviously, in future, we're going to find out there is other things that cause our immune system to be very sensitive and, you know, lead us to other conditions or autoimmune conditions. But gluten is for sure one that has been researched the most.
Yeah, I happen to have some dear friends that have gluten allergies, and it's really, 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 really interesting how severe the physical effects of gluten can be if you're super sensitive to it. But I agree with you. I don't know as much about it as you do, but I think it's really related to all grains. I remember reading something about, oh my gosh, it's some kind of super grain anyway. I can't think of the name right now. Hopefully it'll come to me before we end the program, but it's purported to be a super grain. And I just did some research on it for a friend of mine. And I was like, ooh, there's a lot of gluten in this. And, I would probably avoid this if I had a gluten allergy or things of that nature. So there's a lot going on with diet. And if you had to tell a diabetic some dietary things to maybe lessen in their diet, like the top, what would be your top five?
Things to lessen.
Yeah.
So definitely processed food, because of all things, all the toxins that are involved in processing the food would be a major thing to consider and just try to avoid. So as I see a lot of literature say, just eat things that you know what they are. Like if I see that leaf, I know it's a spinach leaf or whatever plant it is, not something processed where you don't know what's in there. If you cannot read the label, you probably don't want to eat it.
That's a very good point.
Yes. And then there is also just being able to know the names that are given to sugar, so that when you see it on the label, you know that there is a hidden sugar in there, because some of the things will say how much carbs is in there or less sugar, whatever it is, but whatever name they give it, it doesn't trigger you. And that also causes people to use the sugar-free products or the sugar substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
The sugar substitutes, they also have a way of spiking your insulin and blood sugar, because your body still gives the same response. So even if you took in a sugar-free product, it still triggered your insulin to still triggered your blood sugar to go up. That's why they don't always work for people.
Oh, I like that. I don't think that's a common knowledge, is that so buying something that's sugar-free, if you are diabetic, it may indeed be sugar-free, but that artificial sugar has the same impact on your glycemic response and your insulin response. So that is very good to know. And we got processed food, decrease those, decrease sugar, know the names of different sugars in your diet. What else would we say that they should do less of if you have diabetes?
Okay. So besides diet, which when I work with clients, I talk more about how they should naturally watch how some foods react, how their body reacts to some foods. So for instance, when people will eat something healthy, like oatmeal, and their tolerance is so low to the oatmeal that it spikes their blood sugar, versus another person who would eat it and they will not do the same thing. So one of the things we do is I don't tell them to just stop this food and stop that and you know, go crazy and get lost in it. But what's your diet? What do you eat? So how is it affecting you? In other words, how is your body responding to it? Mm-hmm. So that's why they also need to check their blood sugar to know what it, the food they're eating is doing to them. Is this the food I need to eat? Okay, that spiked my blood sugar. Maybe as healthy as it is, it's not for me. So that's and then they look for other options. So usually I would give them a list of options of things to eat in place of things that are not working for them.
So I like what you're saying there. It's not a one-size-fit-all type of thing. Functional medicine really goes back to the study of you as the individual and getting into the root causes for you. So we're not looking at a global approach here. And I love the example. One person would be able to eat oatmeal. Their system is a bit more in a repaired state than another person. They could eat oatmeal, and they'd know this because you have them testing their blood sugar at various times of the day. And so they try some oatmeal. It doesn't have a negative impact, so they can continue with that. But then you're also maybe working with patients who could not consume that oatmeal without it spiking their blood sugar. Then you would know that at this point in your treatment process, you were not able to eat oatmeal. So it's more individualized instead of a one size fits all. And I think that's always important. And when we're talking about healthcare, we don't want to get too generalized and get washed out with the results. So we were talking about diabetes, and you talk about lifestyle changing, and you're talking about making sure that your patients are checking their blood sugar levels at various times of the day. What else are we doing as part of the functional medicine process in order to decrease the amount of pills we're taking and improve our lifestyle?
Okay. So, so watching what they're eating, and then followed by just implementing movement in their daily life. You know, as I said, if you don't move, that blood sugar is stored in the cells and it's got nowhere to go, so your blood sugar is up, it's spiked up constantly. So, and it's been shown that if you implement movement, so some kinds of movement will cause your A1C or the marker they use to see how well your blood, your diabetes is controlled, it reduces that by 0.6%. That is a major thing because there actually are medications that reduce your that number by that amount as well. So which puts it to a point where you could implement simple movement. And this is like 20-minute workout of strength training. So if you're somebody who doesn't really like to exercise, we look at which one works out for you, strength training or is it walking. But all in all, it can lower your A1C by like 0.6%. So when I work with patients, I do ask them to also see which exercise they like or which kind of movement they like, because any movement is better than no movement. And then from there, we look at stress. What are the stresses in their life? Because that's one thing that causes your blood sugars to stay spiked. And so there is gentle stresses that are constant. You know, somebody will be stressed out because of catching up with deadlines or even traffic or just whatever they've seen on social media. And these are the stresses that cause inflammation and cause your blood sugar to stay up. And if you're able to control the stress, you're able to sleep well. And if you sleep well, you're able to keep your blood sugars much lower. Some studies show that if you're able to get a good night's sleep, 7 to 9 hours, I think you should go with whatever you can. And that can lower your A1C by 1.9%. That's huge, considering the medication will do it.
Yes.
You combine two of them. So imagine going your lifestyle change, following your lifestyle changes and just simply going, just go to bed. And your blood sugar is much lower. Or just try to find another way of staying away from things that stress you, or just take a quick 20-minute walk. And all these things combined, reducing your A1C marker, which is what a lot of people are familiar with, by altogether by up to 3 points, which if you took three medications of the diabetic medications, they will do the same thing. So it gets you to think about, I can actually do this because, and by doing these simple things, I can actually have my doctor get me off whatever medication, because now I'm able to do this on my own.
And I love the fact that you're right, by 3 percentage points, right? You could do what I call self-love just by increasing the amount of hours that you sleep per night. And I know that as we move along in our adult life, and you know, whether we're doing motherhood, where we have young children, or whether you're working a strenuous job or running a really busy household, we tend to talk to ourselves and convince ourselves that we don't need 7 to 9 hours of sleep because we are very highly functional on a little bit of sleep. And that may be true. I would not argue with anybody if that's what their belief is. But what I would say, something that's very factual, is that although you may be functioning on the outside world, the inside, your internal being, is suffering. And because all of that cellular repair occurs when you are asleep, and you have to hit certain sleep cycles for it to occur. And for your body to go through these complete cycles, you need to sleep at least 7 to 9 hours per night. So start doing some loving things for ourselves. And especially if there's diabetes that you're concerned about, is making sure you get 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Even if your body fights you at first because it's used to functioning on 4 hours of sleep, just getting in that bed, turning the lights out, making a conscious decision that you're not going to bring any technology with you to the bed, and you're going to just lie there in a nice warm, you know, whatever your temperature environment is comfortable for you, but nice dark space, and let your body start to decompress and go through the healing process. So we're talking about these techniques, these lifestyle changes Dr. Anyani is talking about, but they really sound like just love to me. Getting enough sleep, getting some time in nature, going for a walk and experiencing the beautifulness of nature helps to calm down the sympathetic nervous system and put the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the calmer side of things, makes life look good, helps to activate that for you. And then getting a full, healthy diet. I used to call it the rainbow diet. I got that from somewhere when I was in pharmacy school, but you know, making sure that your plate looks like the rainbow. You got like a lot of fresh stuff on there. I love how you said, if you can't pronounce that stuff that's in the ingredients, then that's considered processed. And you want to make sure that you decrease the amount of processed food. So treat yourself really well, live well, treat yourself well, do these pretty much all, I know that healthy food is a bit more expensive, but you're worth it. And if that's not in your budget, just knowing that you're cutting down on processed food and increasing on the sleep and the time in nature and exercising should be a wonderful way to decrease your pill burden. Like you just said, you could be on 3 medications in order to get the effects, the 3 percentage points decrease in your A1C. 3 medications with side effects, right? Because every medication has some side effect profile to it. Everyone does. But what's the side effect profile to getting some more sleep at night? Probably that's pretty healthy, right?
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer, really, in my mind. It's just a lot of discipline. We tend to think we're wasting time when we take care of ourselves, but really, no part of your life can you do without having a body. You're going to have this functioning mind and body in order to do your life well, and you're worth the investment and time to slow down. So we're talking about the ways that your lifestyle can help to improve your diabetes, Dr. Anyani just gave us 3 ways to improve our blood sugar levels and decrease possibly 3 pills from our medication regimen, if you're on a 3-pill medication regimen or more to treat your diabetes, because you can decrease by 3 percentage points just by doing these things. So with functional medicine, I know a lot of times we're talking about decreasing our pill burden, increasing, improving our standard of living. Sometimes we are conditioned to want the effects to happen fast, right? You say that your A1C is this level today. We want to know, what can we do to bring it down tomorrow, right? And a lot of times we think even medication doesn't usually work that fast. But what are we talking about with functional medicine? How consistent do you need to be in order to see reductions in your A1C?
So like you said, it's self-love, really. But for someone to be diagnosed with diabetes, they have had this high blood sugars for about 5 years. Some people are told, oh, you're pre-diabetic. But then, you know, they say, okay, I'm not diabetic. I'm still okay. and they don't do anything about that. So it takes a while to be diabetic. However, when you start putting yourself first and implementing lifestyle changes, this can happen in a span of 4 to 8 weeks. I've seen people who were mad at the diagnosis. They say there is no way, and in 4 weeks their A1C was down. So it can happen really fast, and then if you implement it in a way that it's more congruent with your daily routine, so that it's not impacting your daily routine too much, it's something that is very sustainable. So it is actually very quick, contrary to what we think that, oh, I gotta wait and gotta go to the gym. No, it's all the simple things you're gonna put in. It's not the fact that you need to go to the gym twice a day and get yourself on a very restrictive diet. You don't even have to do that. You just have to see what food is working well with your body, which exercise do you like to do, and what can you do to avoid all the stresses around. You just need to go walk in the backyard, and that's going to help you. And here you are with your A1C, your blood sugars going down, and even causing you to have pleasant doctor visits where they're saying, okay, maybe you don't need this medication at this point, you know, and it works out very well for you.
Yeah, this is very promising information that you're sharing, because these small minor changes can really cause a huge impact. You know, we're coming towards the end of our time together, and I have two very important questions that I want to ask. One, in talking to someone about this topic, she happened to ask me, do you think that functional medicine could help someone who is suffering from type 1 diabetes, insulin diabetic type 1, as a result of a autoimmune disease? So she developed an autoimmune disease, and as a result of that autoimmune disease, she then developed type 1 diabetes. Do you think these type of changes would be beneficial in that type of patient profile as well?
Okay, so they are beneficial in that they're not necessarily going to cause the doctor to say you're no longer a type 1 diabetic, but when it's happening, there is a lot of inflammation going on in your body. So if you implement lifestyle changes and lessen that inflammation, it keeps your diabetes still under control, and as a result, you're not struggling, or it's not even progressing to where you're needing too much insulin. Sometimes it's progressing towards all the other complications of diabetes that can occur. So it's still,
helping.
If you have classified it as type 1 diabetes, it's there, but your complications
We're running out of time. So the last thing is, how can the audience get in touch with you?
Okay, so they can find me. I have on my website, thewellnesspathfinders.com, or they can email me, my name, eonyoni@gmail.com. Or just find me on social media. I'm on Facebook and on LinkedIn. And I do discuss these topics on a regular basis.
Well, thank you for being our special guest today. You've been listening to Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James. Thank you for being an everyday peacemaker. Until next time, stay peaceful.
Listening to Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James. You have the power right now today to make the decisions, to take the actions that lead you to your next level of greatness. And I would love to walk with you on your journey. Here's some ways we can connect. Schedule a coaching session. Contact me at info@drdrayvonjames.com. Enroll in my online university course, the 2020 Clarity Course, at the Institute for Leadership and Lifelong Learning International. Enroll in the Brilliant Life 9-week online coaching session with me and Keisha Dixon at info@drdravonjames.com. Purchase my book, Freedom is Your Birthright, from Amazon. Thank you for being an everyday peacemaker. I absolutely love you.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you hoping to find an inspirational gift for a spiritual friend? Check out the gift bundles in the Unity Online store this season. These are large and small collections of Unity books, booklets, and products, so you can pick exactly the right assortment of thoughtful gifts. You'll find notepads, card decks, calendars, the positive prayer wheel, and even the prayer for protection lamp bundled together for your convenience. Find it all at unity.org/shop.